Hey, there is a tale from Morocco that is so intense that it doesn't even make sense that I would put it together after that joke. But I have to, because this is what Sun Tzu, let me read you this poem from Sun Tzu. Do anybody know The Art of War? Anybody read it? Anybody living it right now in their home life? Right? The Art of War, this is what he says. The world is a beautiful place to be born into if you don't mind happiness not always being so very much fun. And if you don't mind a touch of hell now and then, just when everything is fine. Because even in heaven, they don't sing all the time. Right? What truth does and what it is, it gets the fantasy out of our head. Nicole Kidman's dad from Australia, and you know in Australia they just tell it like it is. So he calls her Nick. Not that I would know because it's not like she's my friend or anything, but online I do read the magazines all about Nicole Kidman and all the celebrities, so I can say this with great confidence. Her dad says to her, he says, Nick, it is what it is. It's not what it could be. It's not what it should be. It is what it is. Basis of Buddhism, get into it being the way it is. The more you want things to be, the more they are what is, the more at peace you are. And you think, yeah, well, nothing will ever change. Everything changes when we stop fighting with what is. There's a line in the Course in Miracles that says, I let things be exactly the way they are. And we think that's the antithesis of how I want it to be. I don't want things to be the way they are. I want them to be the way I think they should be or the way I think they could be. But they're not. They're the way they think. They're the way they are. And what we're doing is putting ourselves in rhythm with the rhythm of the way life is. Because nothing can be transformed. Hear this, please. Nothing can be transformed until it is accepted. Nothing changes until it is accepted and blessed. Nothing moves until it's accepted and blessed, which is why Rilke, the great poet and philosopher, said, want the change. Want things to be the way they are. Not forever, for this moment. And the fantasy says, oh, wow, we're going to get to heaven after we die from this place we're living. We're going to go to heaven, and it's going to be so fabulous, and there are angels, and everybody loves everybody. And we do this on all the paths, the religious path, the spiritual path. We always think there's a place more extravagant, more exciting, more exotic, more wonderful, more fabulous, where everybody loves everybody, different than where we are. This is the place. This is the moment. And when we understand that all of life conspires to get us to this place where we are, right where we are, it blows our minds. Because we think if life was conspiring to help me, if the winds were blowing, and they call the winds the Ruach, spirit, God, life, the Tao, if the winds were conspiring, hell, I'd have $1 million in the bank. If the winds were conspiring, my ass would look a lot better than it does, right? If the winds were conspiring, we think I wouldn't be bald. I wouldn't have hair on my back, we think. If the winds were conspiring, I would have had a better dad, a better mom. We don't understand that the winds are conspiring. And they've led us here into this moment. Exactly where you are, in the right place, at the right time, doing exactly what you are doing now. Because what you're looking for is right here. It's right here. It's in this moment. It's in this breath. The thing you need to see. What we need to ask for is not to change what is, but to put ourselves in rhythm with what is so that we can be here and let the light of our own deeper eyes shine on what's happening so we can see what the hell it's happening for. and what the hell life is trying to show us and tell us about us. Because all of life is moving us towards our wholeness. And this moment that you're in, whatever it is that is happening to you, whatever it is that's happening to you, that is not a lot of happiness, that's a touch of hell, and everybody doesn't sing all the time, it's not a perfect place that we're headed to when we finally get that enlightenment. That too is a bag of bullshit. It's still part of the fantasy. Wherever we're going to go, we're going to be there. That's not going to change. Even when you get to heaven, you're still going to be you. Right? You're going to take all that baggage with you into heaven. And I don't care how many angels are singing about the sweetness of the fragrance of your breath. If the thoughts inside of you are sour, man, heaven ain't going to feel any different than hell did. This is the moment. So there's a Moroccan tale, and it's called the stoning, which kind of gives it away. If you're a stoner, you might not recognize that right away. You might think, cool, you know, a story about getting high, you know, but it's not that. There's a woman who was a good woman married to a man who went off on a pilgrimage, as was the custom to do. Before he left on the pilgrimage, he goes to his brother, he knocks on the door, and he says, brother, I'm going to leave my wife for a while, it might be a year or so, before I come back from this pilgrimage on foot. So do me a favor, he says, brother, and watch after her. Just look after her. You've already had some of those experiences in your life, haven't you? She's laughing, saying, I know how this ends, right? Exactly. The guy, the husband, goes off on his pilgrimage. No sooner does that happen than the brother, who's a judge, a wealthy man, and respected in his village, comes knocking on her door with a gift, a costly gift. And she is nobody's fool. She looks at this gift. She looks at her brother-in-law, and she spurns him. She turns him away. She knows this is not good, what's happening. The next day comes, he comes back with a more costly gift, takes more money, puts it into the gift, comes knocking on her door. She opens the door and she says to him, what is the matter with you? She said, you're my husband's brother. Why are you acting this way? This is so unbecoming of a man like you. Stop it. Stop it, she says. Well, he gets the message. And he goes back to the courthouse where he works. And because he is a judge, he's a good orator. And he cries out to the entire village from his courtroom that this woman who is his brother's wife is a prostitute. And he creates such a commotion. And it is what it is, right? It's not what it should be. It's not what it could be. It is what it is. He is betraying her. It's not the right thing. It's not a good thing, but it is what it is. He gets the people in the village so alarmed that the village clears out, goes to her house, breaks down her door, and drags her to the center square. Right? And begin in their frenzy to throw stones at her until she's laying under a pile of stones, and they leave her there for dead. Nicole Kidman's father is like so absolutely right. The hardest thing for us to do in our lives, and until we come to peace with it, it's always going to be a hard thing to do, is to try to put together why this is happening to me, because it looks like it shouldn't. A mistake has been made. Now, if this woman were a prostitute, and in those times you could stone prostitutes, you say, okay, so she got stoned. This was justice according to that justice system. And it was at that time. So she got stoned. At least she had the pleasure of being a prostitute for a period of time. At least had some fun. She was an innocent woman. She probably had no fun at all. Right? except on the nights you were permitted to have fun with your husband. In some religions, through a sheet. That is not fun, right? Having done it, I can tell you. Not much fun at all, right? Unjustly accused. Betrayal is not something that happened to somebody thousands of years ago or somebody you heard of. Betrayal has probably happened to every single person in this room. How many people can even say that in their life we have been betrayed by someone? By someone. Hands up, hands up. Yeah, like almost every hand. You know, when we talk about betrayal, we're not talking about betrayal by somebody who we know doesn't know any better and we're going to get hurt because we're in striking distance. I'm talking about betrayal by somebody you love, by a friend, by a family member, by somebody close. That's the betrayal that cuts like a knife. This wasn't a villager, some unconscious villager who got it in his mind. This was her brother-in-law. This was her husband's beloved brother who should have been looking after her. He's the one who betrayed her. And we look at these situations in our life of what happened to me. And I'm telling you, you're not going to find an answer to that question. There isn't an answer to what happened to me. Look what happened to me. Although you will have all the sympathy of everybody in your life of what happened to you, you will discover that years from what happened to you, you can't forgive it. You haven't moved on. When you think about it, it's almost as if it were yesterday, because the bile in you, the contraction in you, the anger and the resentment in you is so fresh and so alive that you've probably told the story like 120 times. Each time the story gets better, right? Because you told it so many times, now you know how to really tell it well. Right? You have people on the edge of their seat, master storytellers of that story, and you're always going to get the same response, which is, man, that ain't right. That ain't right. There's a poet, and he is a author as well, Robert Louis Stevenson. I'm going on my iPhone to pull up his poem. And the poem's name is A Song of a Man Who Has Come Through. Listen to his opening lines. Not I, D.H. Lawrence. Not I, but the wind that blows through me. A fine wind is blowing the new direction of time. If only I let it bear me, carry me. If only it carry me. And then further down, if only, most lovely of all, I yield myself and am borrowed by the fine, fine wind that takes its course through the chaos of the world. See, in all traditions, the wind, ruach, is life. Is God. The meaning of spirit, any kind of spirit, the spirit of life, the spirit of energy, the meaning of spirit is ruach, which is wind. Whenever we talk about the wind, it means that life itself is coming and blowing through your life a change. And we always want that change to be accompanied by Godiva chocolates and a raise in pay. But that change never usually looks like that. The change comes in. She's laying under a pile of rocks. He said, if only I can let this wind carry me. The Native Americans say it in a different way. You're going to notice truth is fabulous, because if you cut across every single philosophy, you are going to find an undercurrent of wisdom that is the same, that is so simple. And in the Native American tradition, they say, sometimes I go about pitying myself, when all along the wind is bearing me into my new life. Right? There is a part of us that knows this. So I know I'm not telling you anything you don't know. There is a part inside of every single person. We can call that part your divine intelligence. We can call it your soul. We can call it your inner compass, your inner self, your inner wisdom. There is a place in everybody that knows this is completely true, and there's a place in us that's forgotten. I'm just reminding the place that's forgotten to help you remember what you already know, that we know that life conspires to move us into our greatest life, and we need to know that at moments. We come to rooms like these to remember that, because when you're laying under a pile of rocks, hello, you need to remember what the real story is, or else you, who's an innocent person like this wife, is going to be horrified that you lived a good life, you did good deeds, you were a good person, you did everything your parents asked, and still this happened to you? You can't accept what is. You're betrayed by what is. Not only did this man, her brother-in-law, betray her, life betrayed her, and we feel that. God betrayed us, and we feel that, because where is God? While I'm under a pile of rocks, clearly God's not here. Clearly the angels aren't here. Clearly life isn't here. The wind that's carrying. Where's the wind at this moment when you're under a pile of rocks, accused of something you didn't do? And a traveler goes by who didn't come from the village, and he hears her moaning under the pile of rocks, and he moves the rocks away and sees that indeed she's still alive. She was left for dead, but she's not dead. We think this experience is going to kill us. We think being betrayed is going to kill us. But it doesn't. Because the point of the experience is not to kill us. The wind doesn't come in to kill us. No experience that is brought by the wind that carries us, that holds us, that supports us. The D.H. Lawrence says, let me be carried by this wind that is bringing in a new life for me. None of these experiences are intended to kill us. They are intended to carry us into the hidden depths within us where the treasure we are seeking lies. And I'm not talking about Lotto. It's a treasure we are seeking that we think is Lotto, that looks like Lotto. But it's what the Tao Te Ching calls. Within, this is where the world's treasure has always been. What we're looking for is that treasure house within our very own selves that we can't seem to find in ourselves, because it's hard to be still for even 2 minutes sitting in a chair, let alone in a world filled with 1,000 distractions every single day. How can we find this inner treasure? So what we do is we say, I'm looking for a treasure. It can't be inside. I can't hear it inside. I can't feel it inside. I'm going to go outside and see if I can find it outside. We go outside looking for something that's on the inside. It's an inside job. And of course, we're not going to find it on the outside. It doesn't exist on the outside. You can get as many things as you want, and it is not going to be the treasure you're seeking. Because the treasure you're seeking comes from within your own depths. Here's where life steps in, and we think it's unfair, but it's not. How else can life help us except like a wind carry us into an experience, a greater story that looks like it's a mistake, only to push us deeper into ourselves so we make the journey into ourselves to discover the treasure we can't live without. We're not going to find that treasure in a guy. We're not going to find it in a girl. We're not going to find it in a great body. We're not going to find it in drugs and alcohol. We're not going to find it. It doesn't exist out here. It's in here. So how else does life help us except carry us into an experience like this, which, hello, we hate? There's not one person in this room that says, whoa, this is fabulous. I've been wrongly accused. I'm totally innocent. The person closest to me has betrayed me. We don't say this is fabulous. We save our choice four-letter words for moments like that, which begin with F. That's what we say. Because we feel like we're effed. We feel like life effed us. The brother-in-law effed us, and our answer is F you. The whole thing is a gigantic curse word because the whole thing's wrong. And yet, the traveler picks her up from under the rocks, brings her home to his wife, and they take care of her. They nurse her back to health. She was left for dead, but we're not dead. The point of every story of our life, the point of being betrayed, is not to kill you. All of the things that have ever happened to you have not been to kill you or to break your heart and have it shatter into so many pieces that you cannot put it back together again despite your best efforts. That's not the purpose. The purpose is, let us, the wind says, let us help you to find the treasure that you are seeking. It calls it, the Tao Te Ching calls it a treasure house. A treasure house, a house of treasure that dwells within, it says, within. This is where this treasure house dwells inside of us, and life pushes us down. I have a friend who, him and his partner just bought a dog that they said, it's like part German Shepherd, part Lab, and they insisted, right? It had paws as big as the state of Montana, giant paws. It was like 8 weeks old, and they said, oh, this is going to be a small dog. It's like, look at the paws. This dog is going to be like a giant dog. No, this will fit right into our house. Well, of course, it's like now 12 weeks old, and it's already a half giant dog. And, you know, a puppy is a puppy. It will piss on everything. It will bite on everything. It will, you know, be us, you know, when we've hit bottom as alcoholics. It's out of control. It's just pure chaos. So what you do in a moment, actually, in training a dog that is out of control in its wild puppyhood, what you do in that moment of chaos is you are supposed to take your hand and put it on the back of their neck. And you put it on the back of their neck, and you don't just put it on the back of their neck. You put it on the back of their neck, and you push them down all the way to the ground until they are laying on the ground, all the way down. And you don't lift up the pressure until they've calmed the hell down, because they don't know what's good for them. They're so crazy, they're going to hurt themselves. They're going to eat through electrical wires. They're going to hurt people. They're going to hurt themselves. We don't know who we are. We have forgotten who we are. We've gotten lost in this world of things, thinking that if only I made just this little bit of money, if only I just found a pretty decent person who, you know, treated me kind of good, if only I was this size and could get into my old clothes that were my skinny clothes, if only I just, you know, wasn't this way, if only life were different, if only we think we would be in a place where we would be back in mastering control of our life. But that vision is so small. It's the tiniest portion of who we are. That's not why we're here. And we've forgotten that there's a bigger picture than the American dream, a bigger picture than surviving and paying our bills from day to day, a bigger picture of why we chose to incarnate in this life, in this world, in this body, as us. And there's nothing in the media, really, on the front page of the New York Times, let alone the Post or the News, that's going to support that story. Oh, your soul is wise. Front page of the Post, right? Circulation goes down to, you know, 47 people, right? Nobody's going to read this story. So we have to remember it for ourselves. And you know what happens? We forget it. In a forgetful world, we forget that there is a greater story of who we are. We are greater than we thought we were. And so what does life do? It takes its hand and it pushes us down in the middle of our busy lives, probably at the wrongest times in the world, and pushes us down to the ground, and boop, we have an illness. And oh my God, something terrible or tragic happens. Our house burns down. The lease is over and I have no place to go. I'm totally sick. I've lost someone. They've betrayed me. You rejected me. I've lost a limb. We've talked about everything here. My plans didn't work out. Something happens when we're down on the ground and in our wild craziness where we could harm ourselves or others, we are stopped dead in our tracks so that we can calm the hell down And from that calm place, they nursed her back to health. She had no energy except to receive the ministrations of this wonderful couple that took care of her. And when they healed her, meaning when she was back in her body and she could move her limbs and get up and walk around and eat and see and realize she was okay, she came back to herself and discovered she had the power to heal. A power she had never heard of or thought of or associated with herself at all. She became a healer, much to her own surprise. So that when a neighbor came to her with a fever, came to the house of the travelers that she was living in with a fever, she cured him. When a blind man came to the house for a bit of food, she helped him get his sight back. She was such a powerful healer that across the entire land, people had heard of her and began to make their pilgrimage to her. She didn't get her master's degree in healing. She didn't read a special book and redo a special journaling and affirmations. I want to be a healer. I'd like to be a healer. I think I'm a healer. Be a healer. I'm embodying being a healer. I am a healer. I am a healer. She didn't do any of that. She didn't visualize it. She didn't even think about it. She didn't even know what was inside of her. We don't even know who we are, the greatness of who we are. If I ask a class of people, as I used to write down the things they dislike, they loathe about themselves, the list is like endless, and I have to tell them time's up because they're still writing. If I say, write down on a sheet of paper in a timed exercise the things you love about yourself, the great things about you that set you apart from anybody else you know. When's the exercise over? I like my hair. I have nice tits. And we go through that list and we can't get down for the first 10 things because we have forgotten. In a forgetful world, the greatness of who we are. She became a great healer. Why? Because she already was one, and life helped her. The betrayal got her there. If we get stuck in the smaller story of what happened to me, we will be angry forever. If we change the smaller story and reframe it so that we can see properly, as the Course in Miracles says, let me see the light in this situation. Let me see the light in this situation. What we're doing is simply a simple reframe, one word. Not why is this happening to me, why is this happening for me? And only the soul can answer that question. Because only the soul knows it is happening for you. Of course it is. Why would this be here if it was not happening for you to take out of hiding the greatness that you are, that you've forgotten you are, that your family has forgotten that you are, maybe that your entire community not only has forgotten that you are, but tells you you're not. You might be surrounded by people who say, well, who do you think you are? So one day, as she's doing her healing, and all her healing happens behind a screen. That's the way she wants it, anonymously. She's behind a screen all the time. So nobody sees her. Nobody knows her. Right? And she's got reason to be in hiding, don't we? When we get hurt, we go right into hiding. Hello, I'm not going to let that happen again. We're not idiots. She goes into hiding. Behind this screen. And in this time, an interesting thing happens. Her husband comes back from his pilgrimage. His house is empty. He goes knocking on his brother's door and says, where's my wife? He says, oh, your wife. Oh, I don't know how to break this to you, but your wife is dead. He said, my wife is dead. How is that possible? Well, the villagers stoned her. They stoned my wife? That's even more impossible. What happened? Well, your wife was stoned for being a prostitute. This is like the most unbelievable story that you could ever even imagine. And yet, the story says, what could he do? It was done. It's what it is. It's not what it could be. It's not what it should be. It's what it is. And at that moment, he actually saw his brother because he was consumed with his wife. But then when he actually could see again, he saw that his brother was covered with sores. And he said, brother, you look very ill. And his brother said, I've been very ill for a year. He was covered with these open sores and absolutely unable to even hold his own body up. He had been suffering so greatly, and not one doctor with any potion, with any idea of how to help him, could help him, and he was failing fast. And the husband said, "Interesting thing that on my travels back from my pilgrimage, I heard about a great healer. And I can take you to her. We can put you on a stretcher, because surely he couldn't walk. He was that ill, the brother. And let's go and see this great healer. She can heal you. I hear great things about her." Off they go to the healer. And they stand there right in front of the screen. Him on the stretcher, the judge on the stretcher, and her behind the screen. And the judge tells her why they came. And she says right away, "You are ill because you have sinned, and you need to confess your sin." And the judge said, "I have not sinned." And she said, "You are ill because you have transgressed, and you need to acknowledge what you have done in order to get well." And he said, "I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't do anything." And his brother turns to him, laying on the stretcher on the floor, and says, "Brother, please, for God's sakes, you're gonna die. If you did something, just say it and get it over with. Otherwise, there is no help for you. Listen to what the healer is saying." And so he said, "Yes, I was the one who told the villagers that your wife was a prostitute, because I made advances on her and she spurned me and I got angry and mad at her. I was the one who caused your wife to die." And at that moment, out from behind the screen, she comes, and they see indeed who it is. And she turns to her husband and she says, "Do you want me to heal your brother? Do you want me to heal your brother?" This is a very big question that she asks, and it's a very big question we need to ask ourselves. Healing is not impossible. Healing is not just for some people. Healing is possible for everybody. Do you want to be healed? Because in order to be healed, in our case, we have to forgive the story we think has happened to us, that looks like it happened to us, that has happened to us. We have to forgive. She had to forgive her brother-in-law enough to even ask the question, "Do you want me to heal him?" She could have said, "Look who's here. Judgment day has come, brother-in-law. F you." She could have done that. Who wouldn't have waited for such a moment? We dream of that moment. And she said, "Do you want me?" And here's where we stand. Unless we reframe our story of being betrayed, unless we reframe it, it doesn't mean we have to have that person move into our house and be our best friend. We need to understand that the wind brought them. That the wind brought them. If we don't understand that the wind brought them, we think it was a piece of ill luck, bad news, unfortunate karma. The wind brought him. Look what D.H. Lawrence says. Look what he says. Let me pull it back up again. And he says, at the end of the poem, he says, "What is the knocking? What is the knocking at the door in the night? Is it somebody that wants to do us harm? No. No. It's the three strange angels. Admit them. Admit them." When we get betrayed, we need to understand whose fingerprints are on that situation. We need to understand what the purpose of the wind in our life is here to help us do. We need to understand why we feel pinned to the ground and why that happens to us. We need to understand the whole thing, or else we're going to misinterpret and think the whole damn thing is a punishment. and go off on a course of anger, bitterness, and resentment till it lands us in a hospital bed, because the vial of that kind of resentment is a poison to our system. That's one way. And then the illness, hopefully, will wake us up. The illness is another hand that hopefully helps us come back to our senses, so we recognize that it was life bringing to us three strange angels. It didn't say, you know, three beautiful angels, three Hallmark angels, three lovely angelic angels singing with clasped hands in a prayerful position with billowing robes. It said strange. We need to understand this is a strange angel when we come to be betrayed. Strange. It's a strange experience when somebody does us harm knowingly. It's strange. It's a strange angel come knocking. That's why we don't recognize it as the wind or as the Lord or as Jesus or as life. We just think it's bad shit happening. It's the devil. It's something I did in another life. I must have been a bastard to bring something like this into my life. We don't realize it's an angel. It's angels, the same three angels, the references, that came to Abraham and Sarah to say, you know what? Yeah, Abraham, you're 99 years old, but you're still going to have your first child, right? That's strange, man. That's strange, right? Because this is pre-Viagra. Hello. So this is really strange. That was a strange angel coming to fulfill that prayer. Now look, three strange angels are coming to fulfill our prayer. And it looks stranger than hell. But they're still angels, and we got to know they're angels. And what does D.H. Lawrence say? He says, open the door. They come knocking in the night. In the night, when it's dark, something dark happens and it makes no sense and it's a mystery. But know that they're angels. They're strange, but they're angels. And angels come bearing gifts. And what is the gift to the new puppy? It's the same gift to us. When it gets up, it is back in charge of itself. It comes back deeper. When we go down and hit bottom, we come back and we're different. We have touched a treasure house inside of us. We have connected to life more deeply. We have suffered. Our heart has broken. And suffering, my friends, you know when you suffer, you soften. When we suffer, we drop that bullshit persona. Right? What's a persona? It comes from the word from the Greeks. Back when they had theater, the Greek theaters, when you wore a mask, it was called a persona. We drop the mask. We drop the lies. We drop the defenses. We drop the walls. We come out of hiding. And what comes out of hiding? Her ability to be a healer, but not just a healer. They never use the word just a healer alone in stories. They always call it a wounded healer. It is from the wound that we become who we become, not the PhD. Sorry. It is from the heart that is broken open. So all the compassion, all the wisdom, all the usness, all the magnificence, all the greatness, all that we came to be pours out. We can't help it. We can't help it. We come back from down in that dark place and we ask this question, I'll heal him if you want me to. Husband, do you want me to heal him? And the husband said, it appears as if he has suffered enough and he has confessed. So please, yes. And without a thought, she does. We reframe the story, and here is the ending of the story. We reframe our story of what happens to us. Not that it doesn't hurt, not that we don't have to have some therapy about it and scream about it and yell about it. All that's true. We talk about that all the time. But after she healed him, and she did, she healed him completely. The doctors could not touch what he had. He was healed completely at her hands. The husband took his wife's hand and led her back home. And behind them came the judge, a changed man. But there they were, the husband and wife, walking home together, very happy, quote unquote, walking home together, very happy. This is what waits for us when we understand that it is the wind that is knocking on our door. In answer to our prayer, it has sent us three angels, but they're strange angels. And so it may look like betrayal by a person you think who does never deserves to be forgiven. And what does the poet say? Have they come to do us harm, he asks, in night when they are knocking on the door. Have they come to do us harm? He says, no. No. So what should we do? Admit them. Admit them. It is what it is. It is not what it could be. It is not what it should be. But it is what it is. When change comes, when the strange angels knock, admit them. Admit them. For no transformation can happen until it is accepted and blessed. And we cannot do that until we understand what the real story is, the deeper story that is happening to us in our life. I think enough said.